For CertSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for September 26, 2007. This edition, we'll talk with Symantec senior researcher Zulfar Ramazan about the vendor's Internet Security Threat Report. Ramazan says cyber criminals are using crimeware toolkits in rising numbers.
So I think there are a few interesting stats in there that, in my mind, kind of highlight what's happening in terms of the overall Internet security threat space. Mm-hmm. The way I kind of see it is that these threats have evolved over the last few years, going more from the notoriety and fame-driven threats to more financially driven threats. Mm-hmm. And certainly in the last year, I think we've really seen a lot of activity that's really pointed to commercial-type behavior among the attackers, indicating that they are very much organized entities. They do a lot of the same stuff that typical companies do when they want to develop software. So we're noticing trends in the way that software, malicious software, is being developed by these bad entities. So, for example, some of the malicious software out there will come with a really nice user interface. It'll be sold in the form of a kit to external parties. In one case, we even saw an advertisement that not only was the malicious code toolkit being sold to an external party, but there's also a one-year support contract as part of the sale. And that's something that, you know, you see in typical companies. You never saw that before in malicious code.
What's the volume of the sales of these crimeware kits?
So we actually don't know how frequently they're being sold, because it's kind of hard to tell. We can monitor that transactions are taking place and that there are offers being made to purchase the goods. We just can't tell if an actual payment was made and the transaction was closed, because that typically happens over a separate channel. Mm-hmm. But we do notice that, for example, some of the kits have been offered for, like MPAC, which is one of the new threats we saw this past year, was offered for $1,000 in the underground market. So there's a decent amount of money that seems to be, they feel they can get that kind of money for these types of kits.
What's the damage that can come from just one of those kits?
So that's actually another interesting trend that's coming out, is that we're noticing that a lot of these single kits have multiple different threats and multiple vulnerabilities that they might be exploiting. So it's no longer the case that there's sort of a single thing that these kits can do. Nowadays, they can do a smorgasbord of different malicious activity. So for example, a single kit can be used potentially to log keystrokes on an end-user machine. It can be used to turn that end-user machine into a zombie on a bot network. It can be used to turn that individual machine into a spam relaying zombie as well. And a lot of the threats we do see employ all these different capabilities of a single commercially available malicious code toolkit.
And I guess I've even heard of these toolkits being updated as well, automatic updates to these things, as well as more vulnerabilities are discovered.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This automatic, and again, that's a great point of showing why we think that the life cycle here is very typical. Commercial software development lifecycle being employed inside of these malicious code houses. And what's also intriguing, I think, is that when you think about it from a perspective of what malicious code does and how somebody might monetize the results of their activities, mm-hmm. all these different types of malicious code have different types of monetization associated with them. So, for example, if I've got a keystroke logger, the way I would make money off of that is by stealing, let's say, credit card information or passwords and trying to sell those in the underground economy. On the other hand, if I got to install a spam machine, the way that I would make money off of that would be by renting that spam zombie to different spammers, and so on and so forth. And the fact that you have multiple different threats that have multiple different models associated with them indicates also that the people who are mounting these threats understand these different business models, and as a result are able to monetize them effectively, which again points to the idea that the people behind these threats are commercial entities within the malware world, not really just individuals trying to do this on their own.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we move forward with some of the trends that were noticed with browsers
So what we did notice is this time we looked at what are called the web browser plugin vulnerabilities. So that 237 number refers not to the core browser itself, but to the different plugins that are available to improve the browser, so to speak. And so what we're noticing there is that, in general, what's happening is that the plugins basically create a more complex environment in the sense that there's now new things running on your machine, these things interact with your browser, and as a result, maybe not all of the interactions have been studied as carefully from a security perspective. And also the people who are designing these plugins may or may not have a background in how to design, let's say, secure software. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, the number of browser plugin vulnerabilities did go up significantly. I think primarily just because there's so many different new browser plugins available, and there's a lot of undocumented features that people may not know about with regard to how this work. Also, a lot of the plugin vulnerabilities we did see were related to Internet Explorer. So, for example, 89% of the plugin vulnerabilities took advantage of an ActiveX component in Internet Explorer, and that's up from the previous reporting period where it was only 58%. So there's a clear indication that if you can find a problem in the plugin, that's just as good as getting into the browser from the perspective of the attacker.
Let's go down to malicious code trends. What are some of the highlights there in terms of what really stands out? I mean, you have a lot here.
I think that one of the biggest things, I think there's two things in my mind that really stand out. First is sort of the overall magnitude. Okay. So this year we saw over 200,000 new malicious code threats that were reported to Symantec, and that number is up almost by a factor of two. It's up 185%. So that's a really worrisome statistic in and of itself. And within that, what I think is interesting is that of the top 50 malcode samples that we saw, two of them targeted specifically online games. And the top targets were Lineage and World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's really interesting because online games actually do have a lot of virtual currency associated with them. And the estimated wealth created by virtual worlds is somewhere along the lines of $10 billion. And so what attackers are realizing, I believe, is that if they can, through different types of malicious code, create wealth within an online game or steal virtual currency, so to speak, that virtual currency can then in turn be sold in various markets for real currency. So attackers are finding another way to monetize their virtual currency, basically another way to monetize their attacks by getting real money out of virtual currency. And that also provides them with an ability not only to get money, but to also launder the money at the same time.
In other news, lax Wi-Fi security was the primary cause of a massive TJX data security breach. That was the message from Canadian privacy officials who released the results of an investigation into the breach. The report was issued by Canada's Office of Privacy Commissioner. It said that TJX collected and retained too much data. The report also criticized TJX's Wi-Fi security. TJX was using the Wired Equivalent Privacy, that's WEP encryption protocol, in an older security standard. They also said the retailer should have upgraded to WPA on a faster timetable. The Canadian report also recommends that the retailer institute a hashing system to avoid using driver's license numbers to track fraudulent returns. And finally this week, a new report from security vendor VeriSign shows that many companies continue to struggle with the demands of PCI DSS. That's the payment card industry's data security standards. VeriSign based its report on a review of 60 PCI audits it recently conducted for 50 large companies. The report also found that more than half of companies it surveyed was failing to meet key elements of PCI DSS. Many companies weren't regularly testing their controls to make sure they work. Well, that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts by going to our podcast landing page at certsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest news and information at our news page at certsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.